Good morning and welcome to our podcast. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Sintons, joined again today by my colleague Louise Weatherhead, who is an associate here at Sintons in our healthcare commercial practice. And our podcast today, which will last approximately 10 minutes or so, Louise is going to cover information governance in healthcare organisations. So without any further ado, straight over to Louise. Louise, we haven't done one of these for a little while. It's great to see you. Good morning and over to you.
Good morning, David. Thanks for that. So let me tell you a little bit about myself. I have worked in the commercial practice at Sintons now for 6 years. I advise on a broad range of data protection and privacy related matters, including negotiating provisions in commercial contracts with third parties, but also policy documents, dealing with data breaches, looking at compliance within NHS organisations and overseas transfers. So in terms of NHS organisations, I have stepped in as an interim IG lead for one NHS trust in the South pre-pandemic. So I've got a fairly good understanding of the types of issues that IG teams have to deal with and the way in which the different functions within the trusts and other NHS organisations operate and engage with one another. So an example of that would be during pandemic, where it was important to engage with the independent sector, particularly with independent hospitals, so that they could assist with the significant pressure which NHS trusts were under to facilitate patient care. So in that situation, there would need to be a variety of protections in contractual documents used so that the data which was shared with those third-party organisations could be protected and the trust itself would benefit from that protection in the event of a data breach. So, as I say, there's a number of things that need to be considered when you're sharing personal information with third parties, and there's quite a complex legal framework which NHS trusts and organisations need to comply with when they are processing personal information, not only in relation to their patients but also in relation to their employees, which are usually vast. So we've got the NHS Act 2006, we've got, as one would expect, the UK GDPR and the Data Protection Act, but we've got a whole raft of other legislation, Human Rights Act 1998, the provisions that are provided following the Caldecott review and the NHS Confidentiality Code of Practice, and last but not least, the Record Management Code of Practice for Health and Social Care. Now, that's just a few of the authorities which the trust and other NHS organisations need to consider. But, you know, this, as I say, that is not an exhaustive list. We haven't considered the common law duty of confidentiality yet. You know, that obviously embeds itself into much of the legislation, but we need to consider that as well. So there's a lot that must be complied with, and it's for trusts to demonstrate that compliance within their policy documents. So in relation to information governance generally, there are a number of safeguards, I like to call them pillars of the institutions, which all NHS trusts should consider and need to rely upon in order to protect the information they hold. So we have the information governance team, or IG lead as it's known. We've got the data protection officer. We've got the Caldecott guardian. We've got the Senior Information Risk Officer, and then we've got the DSP Toolkit, which is provided through NHS Digital. So, as I say, these are the ways in which the organisation protects itself in how it uses and shares personal data. And when I use that word personal data, I'm referring, as many of you will be aware, to the GDPR and the data protection regime. But actually, we need to consider this more widely in the context of information assets. And that may or may not be patient data. As I've mentioned, it might be employee information, or it might be confidential information that has a level of sensitivity to it. And these are all information assets which the trusts will need to be aware of and will need to have a sense of transparency over what is happening, what's being collected, and what is being done with that information asset. And of course, it extends beyond the death of an individual. So many of you will be aware that UK GDPR is only in relation to living individuals, but the wider duty of confidentiality that trusts must adhere to relates to patient information, whether that patient is alive or deceased. So we have a number of things that we need to look at here. And the safeguards, the IG, the DPO, Data Protection Officer, the Caldecott, the CSIRO, and the DSP toolkit all work together so that they can ensure that that information is appropriately and properly protected. So in terms of information governance, I mean, this is such a wide area and it covers such a vast remit, but effectively the IG is the overarching gatekeeper of information. So there isn't much that should get past the IG team that won't also involve those other pillars of the institution that I've talked about. We're not just interested in digital assets, but also physical assets and policies around how those physical assets are moved around, so books, old records, etc. Those kind of things are included within the IG function. And at its core, the IG is a strategic framework for managing information at an organisational level. So it is involved in handling the information in a secure and confidential way, whatever that information might be. And that isn't just in relation to the primary processing of information for patient care, but it can also be secondary processing, which might be carried out to review and improve the quality of that care. So data protection officers are a requirement for public sector authorities under the legislation, and therefore it's a statutory role. This is probably not new news to the listeners. Effectively, the DPO has to be an expert in data protection matters, and it's important that if there is a data breach, then they are the primary point of contact with the regulator, the Information Commissioner's Office, and the DPO should report to the highest level of management so that it can inform and assess risks and to mitigate those risks going forward. So in addition to the DPO, we have the Caldecott Guardian, and a Caldecott Guardian is essentially the senior person responsible for protecting the confidentiality of patient information. So where you have information that may be part of an ongoing project involving employees of a trust, the Caldecott Guardian would not be involved or would need to engage in discussions relating to that project, because of course the Caldecott Guardian is only interested in patient information. But as I've mentioned earlier, if a person is deceased and they are a patient or a past patient of an NHS trust, that would still come within the remit of the Caldecott Guardian, who would still need to sign off in relation to any project that dealt with the handling of that patient information. So the Caldecott Guardian engages with the IG function and with the DPO in relation to all matters affecting patient data. And there are some guiding principles, originating principles dating back to the Caldecott report, which was issued back in 1998, by which the Caldecott Guardian conducts their day-to-day business. So we've also got this term senior information risk owner, and that is somebody at a senior level, usually board level. It's another statutory role, and the senior information risk owner, or CSIRO, has the overall responsibility within a trust for monitoring, reporting, and providing assurance on information risk management. So again, this is a senior role. They don't need to engage at a granular level, but the information does need to be fed up through the chain of communication to them, so that if there is a policy in relation to a particular practice which falls short, and it may be that it looks comprehensive, but then something happens within the trust which identifies a particular risk, and that risk is realised, and the policy doesn't potentially cover off that area, then it would be for the CSIRO to look at that risk, to assess it, to put in place additional policy information so that that risk was mitigated and or eliminated entirely, although the latter is unlikely in most cases. But the idea is is for the CIRO to have an understanding of the strategic goals of the trust and how those goals can be impacted by any information risks that it becomes aware of. And those information risks would be contained in a risk register and would be kept up to date and reviewed periodically so that those risks can continue to be monitored and looked at. So that's the CIRO position. We've got the DSP toolkit, which underpins all of those functions, essentially. The DSP toolkit is an online self-assessment tool that's monitored and managed by NHS Digital, and it allows NHS organisations to measure their performance against the nation's Data Guardian's 10 security standards. So this is a requirement by NHS trusts under the NHS standard conditions contract, and therefore it's really important that they get it right, and where they don't, they need to work on areas where they have not provided sufficient assurance in terms of their handling of data assets. So this is, again, a requirement under the Department of Health and Social Care government policy, and it is something which all NHS trusts must adhere to. So why are all these protections, these functions necessary? Why do we need to have them in place? Well, it's been well documented, the issues around sanctions with the UK GDPR and the fact that the ICO can issue sanctions, penalties, etc. In relation to any breaches of that legislation. But we also have this potentially larger piece, which is the risk of class actions going forward, and where there is a mass data breach of information. Let's not forget how much information is actually retained by NHS trusts and organisations about data subjects, individuals, patients, both current, living and deceased. Then this could give rise to class actions. And if we look at even one class action that is successful, that might cost a trust, you know, several thousand pounds to compensate that individual concerned. And we times that by the number of parties who have been affected, then we can see that this could be significantly damaging and have a huge financial impact on that trust. We should also consider the reputational damage, impact on staff morale, and any contractual liabilities that might exist to partners in the event that there is data sharing arrangements in place and there is a breach suffered by Trust A in relation to Trust B's patient data. So lots to think about. And because we've got these pillars of the institution in place, we hope that they do what they need to if they are operating properly and transparently. Then that covers off the risks that are involved in processing and handling confidential patient and employee information. So I hope that's been helpful. That's a real whistle stop in terms of the types of things which trusts do, how they manage information, and the protections which are in place to prevent that information from being accessed in an unauthorised way. But please don't hesitate to get in touch with me. My details will follow if you have any questions. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Louise. Enjoyed listening to that one very quickly for me. We continue to work hard to produce, release and deliver useful and relevant content, articles, podcasts, blogs, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And you can also follow us on Twitter at SintonsHC or at SintonsLaw. Just in terms of Louise's contact details, if you'd like to get in touch with her or a member of the team about what she's discussed today or indeed any of our healthcare related content, please don't hesitate. Telephone number 01912267878 or via email louise.weatherhead@sintons.co.uk. Thank you once again for listening. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you next time. Thank you.